Welcome to the Athletic MBA Show, Monday through on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Eve. I seem to recall that this house has some connection with the Revolutionary War.
There are no patches on the elbows of this jacket, thankfully.
Obviously, for obvious reasons.
That said,
I mean, didn't George Washington sleep here once?
This is Nerder, She Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
I'm recording. Fix your hair, Seth. I'm glad you fixed your hair, all seven of them.
Hello, and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. It's Friday. I'm Dave Dufour, and I'm giggling here with Mo DeKeel and Seth Partnow, and it's Nerder, She Wrote. Guys, how's it going?
Mo just said something very mean to me.
I took an unnecessary shot at Seth just because I felt like it was funny.
It's okay. It's going to make it into the show. Coming up on the show, we talk about some of our favorite things.
It's not even true.
And then we're going to play a little game that I like to call The Pushback. Guys, I want to start with my favorite thing this week, and it's going to be funny because I don't like game stoppages. Everybody knows I'm against live ball timeouts. I hate reviews. I think that often fouls are just overcalled. There's, you know, the default for referees sometimes is to blow the whistle when a guy falls down or whatever. So this is going to sound a little out of character for me. But my favorite thing this week is all of the traveling violations, the double dribbles, the palming, the carrying, the moving screen violations.
Hey, Rick Barry.
Listen, guys, they're out there.
He's a cop.
Guys, they're out there playing. They're forcing these guys to play basketball. Now, I don't know if you noticed the take fouls, you know, taking those away. It's cleaned it up. We got the beautiful game back, guys. And now, as much as I love watching Jordan Poole carry the basketball around like he's a yo-yo champion, you know, with it just spinning in his hand, it's illegal. And finally, the defense is getting a chance to defend. This is beautiful, guys.
We only need to have one more thing, and that's to ban the help side charge and make you try to jump and play D. And it's like it is nirvana for this collective of people.
It just is. It's cleaner to watch now, man. It just makes more sense to, you know, to – it's basketball, Mo.
No, I mean, I took a shot at you calling you a cop, but you're right. This is the proper way of doing it, in the sense of just the Jordan Poole carries. Like, the third one was the most egregious. He took like four steps.
He gets a couple of years back. I can't think of who it was on the top of my head, but just ran like six steps with the ball spinning in his palm. On a breakaway dunk.
I don't mind not calling that because, realistically,
that doesn't affect him getting the dunk, and it's funny for us to laugh at. But when Jordan Poole is, you know, they're sending double teams at Jordan Poole, rightfully, and he's able to split the defense because he's legitimately discontinuing his dribble and restarting it in a different direction. It's good to clean that up. And Jordan Poole, I mean, he doesn't need that. He's too good. He doesn't need to cheat. And not that he's cheating, but he doesn't need to bend the rules. Like, he's good enough on his own. So I think this is a welcome addition. I think the guys are going to adjust really, really fast. And yeah, shout out to Rick Barry.
I also think this is the other part of this is you mentioned like putting air in the whistle too readily. Like, the default for, I don't know, 10 years has been when guys pull the chair on a post up, it's like, oh, you fouled him. And I've seen at least like five times this week where a smaller defender has successfully not done the thing where they grab him by the waist and fall down like Marcus Smart, but just kind of back up and the guy falls down on his own or stumbles on his own. They've just called the travel and it's like, yeah, reward the guy for, you know, for actually like doing a non-foully good defense in a disadvantageous position.
I mean, in a sport where the offense has all of the advantage, it's important to give the defense a chance. And it's similar to what we talked about last year with the rule change about the fouls and jumping into a guy. I think it's just fair in the sense of like, we don't let you touch them defensively. We can't let the dude, you know, take 12 steps in between dribbles. And granted, I'm being a bit hyperbolic there, but I think it matters in the sense of it allows the defense an opportunity to defend. And Seth, you're right. Like, just the pulling of the chair, it's almost always called a foul, whether it is or isn't. And I think it's always kind of a smart thing. It's defensively, especially when you're undersized. I think we're trending in the right direction with how the game's going. And, you know, the other thing that I love about how the game's going, and this is my favorite thing, zone defense is back, baby. Like, I'm loving it, you know, and it's been coming back for a long time before we're like, oh, it's been around. Da, da, da. Yeah, no. But just think about it this way. We're recording on a Thursday. Last night, the Atlanta Hawks, down like 24, employed a zone on the Knicks, came back and won the game, you know, and it flipped the game completely. Then you have the Miami Heat going to a zone against the Golden State Warriors, which we would almost always say you can't do that against a good shooting team. And they just said, screw it, we're going to do it. They're not shooting the ball that well tonight. Let's do it. They win the game. I feel like coaches being willing to experiment more and play around defensively, I think, has been really interesting and my favorite thing.
Let me ask you guys, because the zone is effective, especially, I mean, if teams can't shoot, but this is not a high school basketball zone, right? This is a little bit more like amoeba style. You know, it rotates. There's more to it than a stagnant zone. How many teams have you guys seen roll out a zone offensive package? I mean, the Warriors' natural offense will work against a zone, right? The high post, facilitator, split cuts, all that stuff will work against a zone. But I think this could be some low-hanging fruit, guys, because the zone, I mean, this has been, you know, 4 years now or so that the zone has been kind of steadily creeping up in usage. But I don't see a lot of zone offensive package when I'm watching.
How big is the difference between an actual zone and a switch heavy?
It's pretty close.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, it's almost a matter of how much aggression where switching. You're probably a little bit, at least the teams that switch well, not the, I mean, you know,
the teams that anymore, Seth. I don't want to hear that bullshit.
We're calling them all zones now. We're calling all the switching defenses zones.
That's zone principles.
That's it.
The team that zone, well, that give up soft trapping, zone principles.
You know, if you're not trapping, we'll just say that's more like a conventional zone, right? Like the soft switch that we see, that's a zone, man. Like, I mean, we've just been calling it switches.
But it's kind of the rec league 2-3 zone. Whereas the teams that are actually doing this well, you know, the Celtics, the Warriors for a lot of the time, they're, you know, it's all been like man with zone principles like tacked on. And now teams have just sort of started to push that over that, whatever that imaginary line that like, no, this is now a zone with man principles. But my point being is that like, you don't need a zone offense. You need to run your offense.
Right.
You know, I'm sure your coaches said, hey, we screen zones too. And you know, why can't you run a pick and roll against the zone? Like you just run your stuff instead of saying, well, we're going to swing the ball around the perimeter and someone's going to shoot a three because zones give up jump shots.
Yeah. It's a lot of that. Yeah.
I just think it's just we got to give the coaches credit for a little bit of being more creative instead of just let's keep running out the same thing over and over again defensively and hope they miss. And I feel like that's kind of the stuff I like. And the fact that they're able to use it in a way to win games. This completely turned around the Knicks Hawks game. Like in the third quarter, the Knicks only had 10 points. And I think they had 10 turnovers on top of that in the third quarter alone. I feel like that kind of just freaked them out. And I think teams have to start focusing a little bit more on how will you attack a zone.
So I think that's in a backdoor way kind of ties into one of my favorite things, which is teams doing some basic stuff well and being rewarded for it. And the sort of the backwards way, I'll get to that from there, is one of the things, the features, and you've done a one more thing about this, I believe, Mo, is the Knicks playing with more, you know, more pace in their offense, getting into stuff faster, running actions, things like that. I think a lot of the teams that we've seen that have been sort of surprise packages this year, that's been a hallmark of San Antonio, of Utah, is not, you know, sprinting up and down the floor. Just, you know, there's 3 to 5 wins a season available for a team that's just going to, you know what, we're going to commit to getting into our offense off of a dead ball at 16 on the shot clock. We're just going to do that. That's in the corporate world, that's a KPI for us. But one thing about the zone is it sort of backs you off of that. And now, you know, in much the same way that switching heavily can do, it's like now, well, okay, we didn't actually create much reaction with our first look. What's going on here? Oh shit, there's 8 on the shot clock. So I like that as a counter, but my favorite thing is teams just, you know, getting up and going and doing stuff and moving and involving multiple players in offensive sets. I enjoy that basketball much more than, you know, the pure, I have the ball, everyone watch me.
You can just say Luka. It's okay. It's okay to just say, like, Luka, as wonderful of a player as he is, and guy does special stuff, he can sometimes be a hard watch as for a basketball fan, because you kind of know what he wants to do. He's going to do it. There's not a lot of mystery there. I think correct me if I'm wrong here, but what you love about basketball is that the ball movement creates the mystery, right? It's like, oh, what's going to happen next? Like, it's fun. It's like pinball. You know, and when you,
I love pinball.
Of course you do. I mean, how did I
medieval
know
madness? Yeah. Let's go.
I could see 5-year-old, 7-year-old Seth at the pinball machine as a kid.
Part of this, though, Seth, it's a double-edged sword here, because part of it is that defensive competence can highlight the good offense, right? Like, so if the defense, I mean, this is, we're going to talk Cavs, Celtics forever, but like two good defenses, you wind up like the Cavs get some really good ball movement, but they're forced to because the Celtics are just so good at defense. So, I'm with you. That we all love the Spurs, beautiful game stuff. So,
but I think the important aspect of it is, though, Dave, even though defenses can force you into that, is offenses let the defense do that to them. They dictate a lot of things offensively, and right. We just see it too many times of, you know, I'm going to dribble up at the top, especially at the end of games. I'm going to burn clock, kind of keep everything going, and then hope I get a shot towards the end of a good shot at the end of the clock. And that's when you're up. And I feel like there's a lot of that stuff. I think, you know, we talked about it so many times, but just the more you get into your sets, the more you make the defense work. What allows the Celtics defense to be so good sometimes is because they only have to defend for 10 seconds and not 24. And I think that's the big thing. And the more we see offenses make defenses have to work for so long, I think then your openings are there.
There was a lot of that down the stretch in that Cavs game where they went to more ISO heavy stuff, you know, just trying to go high screen and roll to protect the lead. You know, this is all the stuff, our pet peeves, the things that we just, you know, get frustrated watching. And, you know, you're right, Mo, an elite defense, it's much easier to do that for 7 seconds than it is for the full 24, or even if 18, if you're pushing the ball, you know, across the line. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess why don't they have this in their playbook? You know, like we talk about guys like Trey getting off the ball, Luka getting off the ball. It just seems to me this stuff would be easy to bake in. You know, all these teams bake in the early post-ups for their bigs. I mean, we know like NFL head coaches, they'll script their first 5 plays or whatever it is. I think NBA teams could just stand and run some offense early and then, just see if it works.
I think some of that is also personnel that they have, right? Like we saw more of Luka off the ball last year because you trust Jalen Brunson to run your offense. And more importantly, Luka trusts Jalen Brunson to run the offense. Same thing we're going to have to see with Trae Young is how much does he trust DeJounte Murray to fully run the offense and do a little more than just stand in the corner, which I'll be banging that drum all year for folks that want to just get ready for that. But I think that's the difference, right? It's having that personnel to do it. Not a lot of teams can run the offense that the Warriors run, which is still Steph heavy. But I think ultimately, it's a lot of different stuff. It's him off screens. It's him off pick and rolls. It's him moving around and screening and then coming to ball. Like it's different, but not everybody can have that in that stuff. And I think that's really the ultimate question that you're asking for. I think it always, the answer comes down to, well, we don't have the personnel to do that with.
Like the Jazz can do that because anyone who has the ball can bring the ball up the floor and get them into like their first thing. Like, you know, the Rockets get into offense early. It's just their offense, they get into it early and they jack up a 17-footer.
You know, one of the things, patience, right? Young guards learning patience. You know, Mo, you talked about the offense kind of waiting for the defense and getting them into the spot that they want them. This is, I was thinking about Josh Green when you were saying that. Like, this is, that's sort of where guards tend to turn the corner. Luka came into the league understanding that pace. LeBron has dictated that pace the entire time he's been in the league. Chris Paul, we know. But the young guys, when they start to figure it out, Ja Morant last year, where it was waiting for that, you know, waiting for the help to come, waiting for, you know what I mean? Your man to set his screen, maybe even flip the screen. That sort of patience to get into your stuff. You're right. It does set up the defense.
There's a balance there, I think, is really what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to play the game that's sweeping the nation, the pushback.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Shut your mouth. You're not God or my father or my boss.
We're talking about the 75.
Get the official to call the by the rule. Stop the traveling. Stop the carrying the ball. Stop the moving screens.
Call the damn game according to the rule book because players will adjust. If you're going to allow them to get away with it, hell, of course I'll keep doing it. Call the game according to the rule book. It's such an advantage to let a guy carry the basketball or take an extra step. That's ridiculous, you know, or a guy to move on offense. I mean, why are you giving all this advantage to guys? They're breaking the rules.
Shut your mouth.
Call the game according to the rule book. I charted a game a few years ago, Chicago, Atlanta. 59 moving screens weren't called. 59. That's insane. I can't even tell you how many times they carried the ball, how many times they traveled with the ball.
Shut your mouth.
It's pathetic. For me to watch this game the way I was taught how to play the game and to watch this and what they allow to let go, it's an embarrassment. I'm sorry, it is. It's an incredible game. The athletes are incredible. What they can do is incredible. And I blame the officials.
Not God or my father or my boss.
And it's the same thing with screens. I'll give you a little lesson here. Okay?
Shut your mouth.
You hear even the coaches, when I'm hearing the coaches saying, well, he didn't set a very good screen. Trust me, guys. A player doesn't set a screen.
Doesn't say when you have to set something, it implies that you need to do something. You have to set a screen.
Shut your mouth.
That's not your responsibility.
Your responsibility, as my teammate for Clifford Ray let's say, is to learn to put yourself in the most advantageous position to allow me to take my man and run my man into him, thereby making him a screener. He's a stationary option.
Not God or my father or my boss.
He only becomes a screener if I run my man into him.
So if I do a crappy job setting my man up, and he's going to come over the screen,
not
what does he think?
Oh,
I'm supposed
boss.
To set a screen.
Oh,
so he
boss.
Moves a little bit to try to what? Set a screen.
That's a violation. It's a moving screen. It's a foul. Officials don't call it unless you take a guy's head off.
That's the problem with the pick and roll play.
They don't run it properly. They don't understand it properly. And even the coaches are talking not intelligently about it. It's not, you don't set a screen.
All right, guys, time for a little segment called The Pushback. As you all know, this show features a lot of pushback. Sometimes Seth pushes back to me, and then Mo will push back to Seth's pushback, only to then encounter pushback from Seth. Pushback to the pushback to the pushback. So I figured, let's just make it official. Guys, I'm going to make a declarative statement. Feel free to make a pushback or agree. Let's start. Sound good?
I disagree with all of them. Let's go.
Perfect.
Pushback. With Dave, pushback. Seth, and Mo.
Guys, the Bucks are 7-0 when we're recording this podcast. They are the best team in the NBA and should be considered the finals favorites.
No pushback from me. This team has taken the mantle of the Spurs, of the team that nobody talks about but just wins a crap ton of games at this point. You know, it's funny. You obviously, for obvious reasons, nobody's been paying attention to the Milwaukee Bucks. We've had a lot going on lately in the NBA. But they're just humming along, continuing to roll. I believe they have the best point differential in the NBA. They're just blowing teams out. They're crushing everybody. Ooh, second. The Phoenix Suns a little bit higher by tenths of a point. But ultimately, you just watch this team and the Bucks just roll. Like, I don't see anybody coming close to what they're doing. And they don't have Chris Middleton on the floor right now. That's the more impressive thing. They're doing all of this. They're beating everybody's ass. And it doesn't matter who they have. As long as Giannis is healthy, they're rolling.
I mean, Giannis has been so stupendous to start the year. Our colleague Eric Name, I believe, has been singing the praises of one of my favorites, Brooke Lopez, who's looked great physically this year, and that's, you know, that's a defense that start that's built on Jrue Holiday, Brooke Lopez, and Giannis Antetokounmpo. Is
you and I could be on the court and yes. We would still get stops, not because of us,
yeah,
but yeah,
in spite of us, but yeah, it pains me to do this considering that I have picked the Bucks to win the title, but I am going to push back just a little bit in that them coming out of the gate early, displaying sort of, this is a hallmark of a Mike Budenholzer team. We're going to do our stuff and do our stuff and do our stuff. And that's a high floor way of playing. And so the fact that their high floor is good and some of the other top teams have kind of been scuffling a little bit, I don't know how much that tells us about their ultimate ceiling down the end of the season.
But is this
so? That's not. I'm not. It's not a full pushback. It's a more of a lean.
Okay, back. If I can give a little pushback to your lean back here, this is a team that doesn't have anything to really prove, right? Like, we've talked about it a couple years now. I mean, we've been doing this for a while. They needed to experiment. They did experiment. The experiment was successful last year. If they have Chris Middleton, I think they would have made the finals. I mean, I do think that was obviously a huge loss for them. So if I can just lightly push back to your lean back, I think the 7-0 matters because they're doing it without Middleton.
I'm not pushing back. I'm going to full on shove Seth right now. All of this stuff. It's hard. You know, you're complaining about the ceiling. The floor is the conference finals. Like, it's not like it's there. Like, they're right in that, like, they're in that range. But no team has looked better than them. Honestly, I don't think any team has looked as complete in terms of just, we know what we want to do. We're going to roll. Part of that's continuity. But even the teams with continuity have not looked very good at times and have had times where they've looked shaky. I haven't watched a game where I felt like the Bucks were going to lose, even when they may have been losing in that quarter or whatever. I just feel like their dominance is coming in a way of, like, very nonchalant. And I'm telling you, it's Spurs 2.0. It's all those years with the Spurs where we just pencil them in for 55 wins and you know, at least first two rounds of the playoffs, they're going to be dominant. And then you figure it out from there. I think this is just, you know, barring injuries and things like that, knock on wood. I don't see it. You can't look at a team in the East or in the West that would scare me against the Bucks.
It's a great place to start. I mean, normally we talk about teams, all right, you got to earn your way back to that spot again. And I think the difference with those Spurs teams, and I think it's fair to put like this kind of iteration in the Bucks, is like, all right, if we're not hurt, we're in at minimum the second round of the playoffs and we go from there and see how the chips fall. And that's a great spot to be. And so I can't disagree with that.
No pushback. I win.
There it is. Yeah. That's a point for Mo. I didn't know we were going to keep score.
Plus one cloud,
but now
Mo.
We are. All right, guys.
Pushback. With Dave.
You may have my I bestow my blue check upon you.
Yeah, just send me
$8.
Just send me $8. All right, guys. Next up, the Suns are currently 6-1 in spite of our concern over the vibes. No Jay Crowder. DeAndre Ayton's been hurt. They still win, just like they did last year. They were 64-18 last year. They had some bad playoff luck, which may have involved, you know, a COVID outbreak that nobody knew about. Guys, the Suns should actually be the favorites in the West. Any pushback?
My pushback is this. The Bucks have proven everything they need to prove over the last 3 years. The Suns, when we're talking about it, when we're compared to the goal we're talking about, we have questions. And those questions are both from their performance in the past and also Chris Paul. You know, he has done the floor general thing, hasn't really made a shot. You know, they made up for the absence of DeAndre Ayton last year. I think that getting DeAndre Ayton, optimized and maximized is still something that is a necessity for them to make a deep postseason run. So these things that they're maybe getting away with now, I just wonder when measure against that higher bar. Do we still have questions? And yes, I do. Pushing back on myself, I will say one thing we've wished they wanted them to have is a change-up way to play. And having Jacques Landale as their backup five has given them that. And so that's a very interesting wrinkle to them that I think is reason for optimism.
I'm going to say something here, and it's going to suck a little bit for Suns fans. Man, do it in the playoffs. Like, that's really kind of where we're at with them. You know, this is they're where the Bucks were after they got knocked out by Miami. And it's everybody was just like, all right, they're in that next season phase where, cool, we got to do that. My concern about this team is their depth. Like, I'm not betting on Cameron Payne, like, as my backup point guard. I know he had a good run 2 years ago, was not very good last year. I don't feel confident in him this year, in just what I've seen early on, just in stuff like the game against Minnesota that they won. That second unit blew a big lead in the fourth quarter that had to bring the starters back in earlier to kind of regulate everything and get back on board. I feel like that's going to be the concerning thing going deep into the season and the finals, because how do you keep Chris Paul fresh? You know, it's an important aspect there, and maybe they sacrifice wins now to do that. And that might be a smart thing, but I just don't see them doing that. I don't think they can afford to.
Chris Paul, who is under 41% effective field goal percentage so far this season. Like, I think that, you know, for as long as he's been in Phoenix, how was the clock ticking on Chris Paul? And I think we saw it, I think, a little in last year's playoffs, and starting the season off, you know, again, still being able to craft his way to a bunch of assists, but not being an effective scorer. You know, 7 games, you don't want to freak out. But maybe you do, because, you know, Father Time is undefeated.
Okay, but there are positives here, right? Cam Johnson looks fantastic, I think, with the starting unit. Mikal Bridges doing even more stuff with the ball in his hands. I think
burying the lead here. Devin Booker is looking like an all
in. Yeah, okay. I'm building up. Come on, man. You know, we're building a drama.
Sorry. Work with me.
And Devin Booker has looked like an all NBA player. That's how you do it, Seth. There's an argument to be made that those three developments, and Devin Booker in particular, can counterbalance the weight of, you know, like Chris Paul's, the fall off, the drop off. You know, I think Devin Booker is a more important player to this Suns team in the playoffs than Chris Paul is. And I think Devin Booker, I don't think we've seen the best Devin Booker can be, to be honest with you. This guy, I mean, what he's doing offensively is pretty incredible. Like, his ball handling has come such a long way in traffic. I mean, he really just gets around the paint at will.
I have nothing to say about Devin Booker but praise. Like, I think he's been awesome, but I think he can't do it alone. is really the concern I have. And you're right. Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges, all of them have looked better. That's not going to be enough. It's not going to be enough come playoff time. And it's not going to be enough if they even get to the finals. So I think that's the important aspect there that we're looking at and we're thinking of is you have to get it's depth. You know, we saw a Boston team get completely worn down, you know, in through the playoffs and then into the finals where they just looked exhausted and they only had five guys they could really play. So I think that's the concerning thing with what you're looking at going forward with them. And that's why I don't, even though they're off to a great start, I don't look at them as a favorite in the West. I think the West is just freaking wide open.
All right, let's flip back to the East. And I mentioned Cavs Celtics. They've had two wildly entertaining overtime games in the last week, and the Cavs won both of them. Donovan Mitchell's addition to the Cavs has been incredible, and we just got to see what it looked like with Darius Garland out there, and pretty damn good, guys. So I'm ready to say the Cleveland Cavaliers are the third best team in the East. Any pushback there?
None. I don't have any. I think it's just right now they are the third best team in the East. It's interesting in the sense of they've kind of hit the ground rolling where we thought some other teams with continuity would look a little better and a little smoother with what they have. And I'm looking at you, Boston. I think the instance is what you have is they've kind of flown right into it. I think Donovan Mitchell is a great piece for them at the end of games, even though I still have questions. It's part of the earlier discussion that we had in the favorite things. There are issues with how he runs stuff into games, but he's the guy they need at the end of games that can get you a bucket. I think Mobley was really good. I think Jared Allen's awesome. I mean, Darius Garland getting back on the floor, pretty impressive. I don't really have a pushback.
My only pushback is why stop at three? I mean, while we have questions about, you know, we're sort of assuming how I think like the putting Boston two, I think is sort of filling in a magic asterisk of healthy Robert Williams. Because healthy Robert Williams, the Celtics as constituted are on the level with the Bucks and whoever else you want to put in the top tier teams, the NBA. I think that, you know, we probably have to see that before we assume it. And in the absence of that, are the Cavs just better than the Celtics right now?
I'm extremely impressed with Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland's defensive effort. I mean, Garland hasn't played a whole lot yet, but his effort was, I thought, spectacular. Donovan Mitchell made legitimate defensive plays down the stretch against
five of them.
He was all over the place. He was a man.
It was impressive.
A man possessed. I said he was playing with his guts out. And that, honestly, Donovan Mitchell, I have watched him extensively in Utah. I mean, this is not a surprise to me. I watched him at Louisville. I was one of the few people that in the draft process was like, no, this guy is going to shoot in the NBA. And I think he's going to be pretty good. I've never seen him play like this. It's a whole nother level of intensity from him. And then to have Mobley and Jared Allen backing those guys up. And by the way, Mobley taking a little bit of an offensive leap so far this season, in my eyes. His post-up game looks better. That little jump hook looks really nice, and I like how he's attacking from the wing. If they get some in-season development, if Darius Garland is going to take the leap, you know, like Ja took last year.
I mean, he was an all-star last year.
I mean, I don't know, man. This could be conference finals.
I mean, there is the hole at the three is still there. Dean Wade has kind of filled in and sort of doing a poor man's version of what Lauri Markkanen gave them last year. And that's been competent. That is the spot you worry about, both because I think they do need the one more shooter. And also you do worry about, Mitchell was really good last night, you know, matching up against Jaylen Brown in particular, I thought. But guarding those kind of big wings that you tend to face in the later rounds of the playoffs. Dean Wade has been good, but how good do you feel about, all right, we got a 7-game series. Dean Wade, go guard Jimmy Butler, go guard James Harden, go guard Jason Tatum.
And LeVert, you're still Gerald LeVert. Sorry. Caris LeVert. Caris LeVert actually did a pretty good job against Boston in both of those games. I thought, I mean, you know, like, he's not the guy. Like, he's not a lockdown guy. But I thought with what he brought on the offensive end, especially playmaking, he's done a good job finding guys in the corner for open threes. He's been better than Okoro out there in that spot by a lot, because Okoro's negative on offense just hurts him too much. This team, when they get Ricky Rubio back, I mean, they're going to have some really, really crazy lineup combinations, I think.
They're going to be interesting. I think just the one thing I'd say about it come playoffs is this is still a very young team.
Oh, yeah.
Young team. Like, before we go, and I know young teams have had a run in the playoffs. It's still, let's enjoy the ride, guys.
Well, speaking of youth, I don't know, maybe youth. I don't know. It might not be a young guy that gets this, but guys, I think we're going to get a first-time MVP this season. I think there's voter fatigue, certainly, which we all know is a real thing, and Giannis, as incredible as his season has been so far, I mean, I think he would have to sustain this all year. Jokic.
You're saying the Bucks need to go 82-0 for Giannis? 82-0,
and Giannis is the MVP, undeniably. I don't think Jokic is going to have a shot because now everyone's back and, you know, the expectations are higher. Steph feels unlikely. LeBron feels unlikely. I think we're going to get a new MVP this season, guys.
A first-time MVP.
You're just going to skip over Russell Westbrook?
Yes, we're going to get a first-time MVP. Excuse me. Thank you. Thank you, Mo, for correcting me.
Can you get the MVP and Sixth Man of the Year award in the same season?
No.
We need that to happen once. That'd be fun.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
So, I mean, obviously the you know, a place to start there. I mean, I think he's a guy who's everyone's kind of like, you know, MVP every year has been Luka Doncic. And I think obviously the Mavs are putting up a ton of points. He is, I think,
seven straight 30-point games to start the season. Yeah.
He's doing enough, everything, perhaps too much. But the biggest obstacle for them, it was going to be their record. They need to be like a top 5-6 overall record in the NBA, generally speaking, to get in the MVP. And the question is, do they pull out enough close games, or does their sort of proclivity to, you know, it's a several season long proclivity to kind of fall apart, not fall apart, but like the, everything we're talking about, like Mitchell offense end of game, certainly applies to the Mavericks, with the added thing of Luka's had to carry a 38% usage for 3.5 quarters. And he just like gasses out. Like, we've seen it in games. We've seen it in playoff series over his career. That said, Luka's certainly there.
This could be one of those years where Luka wins the MVP if he keeps the Mavs at second and the team flames out in the first round because of just the expectation and the he's exhausted at the end of the season because of everything Seth said. He's got to do everything for this team. When he goes to the bench, good Lord, it's rough, you know, and, you know, I think that's kind of the question marks there. And maybe if they make a tweak or something in the season and things like that. But, you know, Luka would be a guy. But, hey, man, like, I'm going to say something kind of wild, but why not Ja?
Why not Ja? I mean, he's doing it without Jaren, right?
Right. I mean, you know, they got to still lift up and get, you know, the wins have got to get there again early in the season, man. He's one win behind one loss behind the Mavs. So it's still too early to kind of worry about that. But if he gets them up to this level where he keeps them afloat and is healthy all year, I don't know if there's been anybody that's been able to stop him as a team. He's been great. And I think this is one of those things, you know, Ja's another guy. I mean, this is way too early for these conversations, but no pushback from me. I think we're going to get a first time MVP winner.
Oh yeah.
This year.
I dare. I mean, no one would dare have an MVP conversation in the second week of the season, guys. I mean, it's, you know, we dare to be different.
Pushback.
It's
the third week of the season. So I'm going to push back.
And another pushback.
Yeah. No. So I think this ties into what to me has been one of my sort of, a trend that I think has been, maybe it's just how the start of the season has started, but maybe it's real, is I think we've been sort of wondering about it for a while. I really think we're seeing a changing of the guard at the top end of the league, not just the teams, but the players. We're kind of moving on from the KD, LeBron, whoever else group. And the next group, Ja and Luka and Jason Tatum, and if Mitchell keeps playing this way, and whoever else you want to name, are going to now become sort of the new standard bearers of the league. And I think that ties in with the fact that my impression of this is mostly that Bucks aside, the teams that have been surprisingly good so far this year have been young. The teams that have been surprisingly bad so far this year have been old, and many of them have looked creaky. Like, I mean, Clippers, Sixers, team in Brooklyn we don't want to talk about. Like, we think we can go like Warriors at times?
Okay. Yeah, the Warriors, the rotation stuff is so weird. Yeah. I can't even really talk about the Warriors unless we're going to just dig into how weird some of the rotation stuff is.
Yeah.
They're clearly not thinking about right now.
This is a bonus pushback because I'm going to push back on Seth a bit.
Let's go.
We're in the third week of the season. Like, let's see where we're at.
You know, I started with that caveat.
Yes,
so you're pushing back on the lever I left out there
for you. To say, which is back on the, you know, the
credit.
You can't take away the argument by just saying, well, we could do the caveats all
try.
We want. Yeah, and I'm not going to let you get away with it. It's the third week of the season. I want to give it more time. We got to let the season breathe a little bit more. We're not even at 10 games, Seth. Now, I'm with you when the young stars are kind of like, we've talked about it a million times. Like the coming crop is phenomenal and things like that. I feel like this could be a thing too of young teams kind of youthful exuberance to start the season.
Yes.
And older teams kind of just like,
have you heard the
October.
Story of the young bull and the old bull?
Exactly. Funny story about that. If you want a side note, is Michael Finley is the one that told me the story of the young bull and the old bull. Once after a practice when I was rushing to do something and he slowed me down back in the day when I was younger. But I think you have a lot of interesting teams. I think you just got to look, the Warriors, even we know they're doing stuff differently. I think Denver's easing into the season. I mean, the Clippers are a disaster, at least for me right now. If Kawhi can get somewhat healthy or something like that, I think they can kind of find their flow and back in their rhythm. I think the older teams will start to rise. And some of the places I'm including older teams, Boston, older team. This guy's been around forever. Like they could be starting out a little bit slow. I think a lot of the teams apart from the Bucks are teams that have something to prove and have to go hard all year. And I think that's kind of the difference with that. And the older teams are kind of just like, man, we've been there before.
Yeah, I know. We've talked about this. Like been there before. We can just get to the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. We generally hate that. And like the funny thing is if there is a team that we would accept that from, it would be the Bucks. But they're the team that's, no, we're taking care of business.
That's why Giannis is the most refreshing superstar we have in the NBA. I'm sorry. Like, just even today, he told a terrible joke and then put it on his Twitter. Like, it's just fun in that sense, but also, like, he goes hard in pregame. Like, he has to change his entire workout clothes afterwards because it's just a full sweat. Like, you know, it's in that vein of that. And if that's what your superstar is going to do, Wesley Matthews can't just be chilling.
Right.
You know, it's you got to go.
You're never going to go see Giannis and feel like you wasted money on a ticket. This is why I love Russell Westbrook with all my heart and why I love seeing him succeed as a sixth man. You guys got anything else before we wrap up for the week?
Absolutely nothing. I am content. I am enjoying. We've had really good basketball.
It has been.
Let's try to keep the conversation, folks, more focused on basketball. I know there's a lot of noise going. Try to lock in on the basketball because it's really good.
Next week, we'll discuss whether Matt Ryan, that plays for the Lakers, is now the most famous Matt Ryan in sports because he made one shot. For Mo DeKeel, for Seth Partnow, I'm Dave DeFore. This has been Nerder. She wrote on the Athletic NBA show. Keep it.
Pushback. With Dave, Pushback. Seth and Moe.